Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Can you all hear me in the two and nineties? You're very welcome. My name's Arthur McKeown, and over the next 35 minutes or so, my song is around disruptive innovation on a device near you. And I would be a great person to stand long between you lot and your drinks and nibbles. So I am going to move briskly through a couple of dozen slides with some brief breaks for a bit of reflection, observation, and I would commend to you the idea of perhaps making a note if I say something that can perhaps be further explored in your own time after the event. That said, I will, in my final slide, be giving you a link to the various resources and support material that I've drawn on in looking at this subject area. My name's Arthur McKeown. I work at the University of Ulster and have done so for the last 20 or so years. But before that there, I worked in the world of English language teaching, where I learned that, like any good lesson plan for the Celta or Delta, you have some objectives, give them an overview, and then give them some idea of what they should have been able to do by the end of it. So I'm going to look at the area drawn from modern management thinking of disruptive innovation. Am I talking too quickly, or are you still with me?
Right.
Maybe you can get faster. Is there anyone in the room from Cavan? You're very welcome. What part of Cavan?
Ballygemstock.
I'm talking about Cavan Town. That will feature later. But I can feel I'm among friends already. I want to look at, if I may use a four-letter word, MOOC. What is a MOOC? You're going to know about it in the next few minutes. As a pipeline that will help us get more students into our programmes. And I want to look at how you can help me as I think about designing, developing and documenting a business case that I can take to my part of the university. So I hope this is going to be pretty participative. It will be mainly PowerPoint with a little bit of discussion. Say hello to your study buddy sitting beside you. You'll have a word. And then later, some signposting to some resources. I hope by the end of all of this, you'll have an idea of what disruptive innovation is. I then hope that you will be able to see where these MOOCs might be of help to you, and I am going slowly and looking into many pairs of eyes as I say this with passion. Look at MOOCs as a source of your own continuing professional development. They are a rich and recent resource that can help perhaps you develop knowledge and understanding of areas of professional development, either within language teaching, within management, or beyond. I've signed up, for example, in January for one on corpus linguistics provided by the University of Lancaster. I came across it, I signed up, and I'm looking forward to it. But you'll be able to find one that perhaps suits your own continuing professional development. And you'll be able to become, I hope, able to make better and more informed decisions about how MOOCs might contribute to the work that you do, either yourself or in your own organisation. So that's the most worthy of the slides. Now just a word on my own background. I have worked for 20 years in English as a foreign language, for 20 years in business and management, and I have a considerable interest in how technologies and online can help. I worked for 2 years in Sweden, mainly teaching pharmacists. I then worked for 3 years in Kuwait, mainly firemen and fire and safety. And then for 4 years, I was the director of a language school in Colonel Gaddafi's Libya. This is the new flag of the Libyan state. I've done a fair amount of work for the Open University, and I'm a great fan of online and distance learning. But much of my career in more recent decades has been with the University of Ulster. But I am not an English language teacher per se. I teach mainly native speakers who are on certificate, diploma, bachelor's and master's programmes. But I do seem to be getting increasingly involved with supporting people whose first language is not English. Moodle is my friend, although it is not the one that is adopted by the University of Ulster. But I've also become aware, and I'll tell you the story of this in a moment, of some other providers of these MOOCs, Coursera, Udacity, edX and so on. I have recently, with Rolf Reich in Paris, produced a book in the Cambridge series, and I'm not here to promote it, and I don't have a workshop tomorrow, but I am just making the point that this will explain perhaps the Cambridge connection later. Question. Is the world in which we live and work, is it changing? This is, you've got a minute and a half, minute and a quarter, go to your study buddy, cuddle up, find a friend. What factors in the wider world are likely to have an impact on the environment where you work? Thank you is a polite way I have of saying, can we all come back together again? Come back together again. Any idea, what have you found yourself talking about, Niall?
Well, if we were going to talk about, apart from the global, the capital, the campus, the GSP, stuff like that, I was kind of considering just some of the cost-effective options of technology isn't always expensive. Whatever you find out there is going to be a cheaper.
Okay, so there's the economy and the state of the local, national and international economy, and perhaps even more pressure then on getting cost-effective technology solutions. Good one, thank you. Another one.
Politics, within Asgard.
Yes.
So the occupation deals with the education and working.
Okay, Okay, thank you. Good one. Another one, perhaps.
Would you like to phone a friend?
Well, maybe it's not relevant, but I think Elon Musk has a huge influence on the way things are driven. His development. He's just going to accelerate technology in all areas.
Okay. Well, to be honest, I'm drawing breath here slightly to make the point that when I have given some thought in the world of education and teaching, I've seen three things that I want to focus on. One is we're having to respond to the challenges of technology. I'm old enough to remember the slate boards, and I still carry my lucky piece of chalk just in case the electricity goes off and you have to bust your way through something. But the technology is there and it's not going to go away, and people expect it. I'm also aware in the Irish environment, the British environment, there are, in any nation state, there are a lot of people who aren't native speakers of the local languages. And that is something where it is proving quite difficult perhaps to get precise figures in terms of where the nationalities are and so on. And to be honest, with a project I'm going to talk about that's in Cavan, there are very considerable numbers of Poles, Latvians, Lithuanians, Brazilians, in the town and around Cavan. And finally, I want to tell you the story of massive open online courses, MOOCs. And as I go into it, this is just a bit of optional reading, but there's a great book from The Economist last year called Mega Change 2050. And the editor of The Economist introduces it in 18 minutes, on YouTube, and he goes through big picture things that we can identify, like population changes with people aging and becoming more urban, the rise in confidence in many African countries, the changes that come from Facebook and the iPad, the technology, obesity, the rise of China, innovation, especially in the sciences, biological sciences, perhaps even more than chemistry or physics. 3D printing, many of you have used it, seen it. The idea is that you can use like an inkjet printer to produce something, and then food, just more people and more demand and changing demands. So that's just a little bit of optional reading that lay around my understanding of how education in particular has changed. I'm sure many of you are familiar with the work of a guy called Ken Robinson. He was the chief inspector of schools. He's on TED. He's had 20 million hits on TED. I'm not jealous. He's had 20 million hits on TED. And certainly a very useful 15-20 minutes. He was also on Desert Island Discs, BBC program recently. And there's a very good RSA anime in which he talks about how generally education is no longer fit for purpose. And things that were designed in the 18th and 19th century in terms of class size, the whole idea of the school day and so on, the curriculum, it's in need of thinking again. I wish to goodness this was one of my own students, but isn't that a great picture? You know, there are tiger mothers, tiger fathers of all nationalities, but having a pillion seat turned around the other way so that the son or daughter can continue their academic studies, which many of my students, perhaps yours, are more enthusiastic than many of mine. But education's changing. Anybody remember these? I remember in my teenage years at the school I went to, I was supposed to be learning French. And they, over the summer, installed a language laboratory. And we were put into cubicles like this, put on the headsets, and 14-year-olds were told, oh, don't touch, you know, don't fiddle with it, you'll break it. That, the resource, the facility of a language lab that in the 1960s will have cost thousands, are now available on the smartphones as free or downloadable apps. And that's where I'm going with this. I'm also aware that whole businesses are having to change their business models. Again on TED, this is a guy called Richard Baranek of Rice University in Texas. And half a dozen years ago, he spoke about how the whole world of publishing is changing. This is Chris Anderson, editor of Wired magazine, talking about the long tail. And this is a picture of myself supervising a meeting at the Kremlin recently where governments are thinking about how the technology can be coped with and changed. The models are changing. And very briefly, you'll have seen telephones wired to the wall and the Sinclair ZX81, and then along comes Steve Jobs and the iPad, and things that were done as separate devices, telephone, camera, computers and so on, are now all integrated into devices that will allow us to do social networking and blogs and Skype and so on. All of these are having an impact, but there are constraints and challenges with the users of the technology. And young people who have grown up digital are people who have different learning styles, different preferences, different ways of working. They are the digital natives. People of my generation, we're the immigrants who have to try to make sense of all of this. The technology has been becoming cheaper and cheaper. Moore's Law has now got us to the point where wind-up and solar-powered computers connecting to the internet with things like cloud computing can give access that means that We don't have all the spaghetti of cables and so on that perhaps people in the room have grown up with. I believe even Her Majesty the Queen has an iPod and listens to her selection of listening pleasure. I am not getting into whether texting is good for the English language, but you'll get David Crystal, patron of IFFL, giving his views on a BBC television programme. It's up on YouTube. Then MOOCs. How many people have heard of MOOCs? This side of the room more than this side. Can I ask, when did you first hear of them?
Probably about
2 years ago. Any advance on 2 years? 2010. To be honest, it was only in the Christmas edition, the bumper one of the Economist magazine, that I first heard of MOOCs. And I didn't pay too much attention to it until I saw a number of newspaper articles, one or two things in the Times Higher Education Supplement. Those were emerging during the spring of 2013, particularly as a challenge to established university courses. And the link is at the bottom there, but I gradually compiled just a little website in particular for resources where I could get my own head round the potential of this over the last half dozen months. And you're more than welcome to visit that. In particular, have a look at the video on TED where the people who started one of the MOOC providers make the point that MOOCs have been growing faster than Facebook. And at that point, I really did start to take it more seriously. And I began to look around anybody else in the University of Ulster who might have an interest in this subject area. But I also started to be a fairly hands-on person for this sort of thing. I wanted to move from something where I felt I already knew the content into understanding the process of a MOOC. This is a guy called Donald Kagan, who teaches ancient history at Yale, and I was able for free to follow some of his stuff on YouTube. And I said, well, is there anything similar within a MOOC environment? I'm a graduate of the University of Edinburgh, and they had a very successful first experience with a philosophy MOOC, which got 107,000 people. 107,000 people enrolled for it, 8,000 completed. The point being that retention rates in these programmes are very low compared with many other programmes. But there's emerging discussion around that. I myself completed a programme with a guy whose name I'm not going to try to pronounce at the Wesleyan University in America, and I understood from it where I already knew the content, at least of a degree in this stuff, so I was able then to see, well, how did the MOOC work? And I was very impressed with the 6 weeks, but I was particularly taken with how much time it could potentially take. They advertised maybe 3 or 4 hours, and I was spending twice that. And I already thought I knew a fair amount of the content. So watch the timings for these things. This is Mary Beard, Professor of Classics at Cambridge, interested in it, and the guy at Harvard. So if classics can be doing MOOCs, what could be done in other areas? This is the point where I then said, well, this actually has potential for disruptive innovation in the world of education. Can I ask, like MOOCs, have you heard this phrase, disruptive innovation? Anybody prepared to give us some moment?
No.
Sorry, you make eye contact with the teacher, so I haven't asked you a question.
I should know, because I did a course on this earlier on the year, but I didn't know you were going to ask me today. No, I think disruptive innovation is, the innovation which seeks to kind of frustration break.
It's not just the Me Too of doing something a little bit different, it's really a major change in the business model. Let's just look at a few examples. But the guy, if you're into this sort of thing, there's a guy called Clayton Christensen, works at Harvard, and In the Elton's got a mention earlier. Does anyone watch the Eurovision Song Contest, or are they prepared to admit it in public? But the equivalent is thinkers50.com, and every 2 years they do who is the most influential management guru at work at the moment. He has been top of the pile in both 2011 and earlier this month when the 2013 results were given. So if you look at any of his ideas around this, it'll validate some of the things where people like Richard Branson have changed or had an influence on changing the business model used in music and the media, airlines, trains. 3D printing is being hyped at the moment, maybe not overhyped, but the jury is still out about how 3D printing can have a big impact on manufacturing processes. Containers, you know those big boxes that we associate with the ports around the world? Have any of you seen a film with Tom Hanks? I saw this film called Captain Phillips recently, and it really brings home to you the size of these huge containers. 40 years ago, stevedores in the ports of Dublin and Belfast and beyond, many, many people were employed lifting boxes and barrels off ships. But when containers came along, invented by a guy called Malcolm McLean, you know, that has transformed, that has disrupted sea shipping. Another example, does anyone recognise this gentleman? And it could be others, and I'm not betting into it, but I'm sure we all have our Michael O'Leary or Ryanair's. But think Stelios, and Michael O'Leary and a few others have changed the whole idea of travel agency and how we used to book tickets and flights. Lawyers, this is Richard Susskind. He was at Glasgow. He then went to Balliol in Oxford to do a PhD on the impact towards the end of the 1980s of the word processor on solicitors' offices. And he's written a book, he's written a couple of books that have come out in the last year or two about the whole way we are now expecting to be able to commoditise different products and services. So in the light of all of this, and seeing other examples like Muhammad Yunus and the Grameen Bank in microfinance, very inspiring. Go to the Nobel Prize website and the acceptance speech, first minute or two is in Bangla, but then in English the next half hour, telling the story of how this disrupted a lot of the banking and opened up rural communities with especially women who were able to borrow and lend to each other. So at this point I then thought, well, this is all business. But somebody told me about Hibernia College and the Gathering, and they have put together a MOOC. And can I draw attention to how they get the endorsement of Enda Kenny on that website? This is the point where I realised, well, MOOCs are, you know, well worth taking seriously. Where will I find out more? So, as one naturally does, I got on the plane one morning and I went off to Ayatollah, and during the time I was in Ayatollah, I was able to go around and just go up to people in corridors and mutter at them MOOC and see what the response was. And I got responses from the likely candidates, Nikki, Paul, Nick Peachy, Bethany. They all were giving me an idea that they'd heard of MOOCs, but nobody seemed to be doing a wild amount in it in English language teaching. So I then had my aha moment. We have a programme in County Cavan called English for Employability. It's a programme to help people who are resident, long-term resident in the county, and around Cavan Town, they are Brazilian, Polish, Latvian, Lithuanian mainly. They're working there. They're often highly educated, but they don't necessarily have the language skills that would allow them to contribute to the local economy, the national economy, as well as they might. So we have this program in which we've been able to put people through English for Employability program that leads to the Cambridge BEC exam. We've so far had 41 students. Most of them pass with 9 different nationalities. But my concern was, well, could we not, first of all, get those people to move on into other University of Ulster programmes? And indeed, what about the people who, when we tested them, were not yet ready for the English for Employability programme? To be honest, they'd often been so, their mistakes and errors were so deeply ingrained because they'd been allowed to get away with it. They hadn't necessarily been at English language courses. But I realised that there was the potential for a pipeline that would allow people who completed that programme, if we could get them into it, through a certificate or advanced diploma, the BSc and potentially even the MSc. People who might be working in the public, private or the community and not-for-profit sector. This fits the university's outreach agenda, our mission, our vision of being much more than just a terrestrially based university in Jordanstown and beyond. We wanted something more than that. So this is where the MOOC came in to my mind. And if we could do it in Cavan, could we do it a bit closer to home? Within the north of Ireland and the province of Ulster, there are places with a lot of potential users of such a programme in Dungannon, Craigavon, Newry, Belfast. People who were perhaps Polish, Latvian, Lithuanian, where word of mouth could be used to get in contact with them. So I started to devise an offering that could be put together, and this lies at the heart of what I want to provide as a basis for discussion. For 6 weeks, using the MOOC model, there would be an introductory entry test to ensure that people were at the right level, not too high for the programme. There would be some sort of video focusing activity, something on grammar and vocabulary, and then listening and reading. That was containable. But I did have a problem over how do you practice the speaking and perhaps the writing element. We'll come back to that in a moment. Motivating people through quizzes and then an exit test. It could be delivered through a website with some lecture areas, further resources, all things that are typical of the MOOC format, and a discussion forum. I wanted to wrap it around, rather than reinvent the wheel, wrap it around a couple of books, perhaps one for vocabulary, one for grammar. It would last 6 weeks, and it would be either no or low-touch key tutoring. The solution involved a couple of books from Cambridge, who are the people I probably know best. The Raymond Murphy Essential Grammar in Use, which comes with a CD and costs about €20. And then from the same stable, Mike McCarthy and Felicity O'Dell, the English Vocabulary in Use. So rather than reinvent the wheel, these are designed for self-study. The answers are in the back of the book, but you could slice them up into six weeks of individual units. There would be issues around individuals' learning styles and preferences. The whole idea of learning a language involves doing it socially with other people. So how could we deal with the, perhaps not just sitting in your own small corner doing private study, but get people into something a bit more social? I needed to see how this could lead to a business case in the university. There is the retention issue. People might sign up for it, but would they see it through? And then how could we get it accredited? I answered some of those through... How many of you are familiar with meetups.com? Mm-hmm. stay there a moment in the sunshine. What is a meetup?
Just a way of getting people to get together.
Yes. There is a website called meetups.com. There are events going on in the next few days in Dublin where people who share an interest. Now, it could be in aromatherapy, basket weaving, learning Korean or practicing Korean they've already learned. It could be developing a business plan. But I said, well, if we could use a mechanism like that, once a week in Cavan, in either the Meadow View, a bar, or one of the cafes, people who would be in a pilot group would be able to have that interaction with other people, and I could provide agendas that would give them structured discussion activities to practice the language that was in the Murphy and the Mike McCarthy Felicity O'Dell book. So that lay at the heart of it. We had a seminar day to introduce this to 19 users, and they are coming to the end of this prototype pilot embryonic test of the feasibility and viability of an idea. But it seems to be working. I am aware that there are other solutions and resources as competitors. The British Council, there's a lot available there. The BBC, a lot there for people who are learning English. Cambridge itself has the B1 online course, and there are private providers. One last question. Anyone familiar with BAD? Did any of you ever join a paramilitary organisation like the, you know, the Boy Scouts or the Girl Guides? And you remember you collected badges? Now, this is not leading edge. This is leading edge stuff. But there's a guy I heard from recently called Kyle Peck at an event down in Cavan, in Cork, talking about Mozilla badges that would be putable on your website, putable on your LinkedIn page, that would accredit learning you'd done. And these could be a coming thing for not just academic courses, but other things. You heard it first from Arthur McKeown. And there's more. Eliadomy. It's apparently Moodle for simple souls like myself. And this is a case, this is an environment for putting together a light Moodle to support people in this area. And then the business case, and I move into the last minute or two. What I want to do is take to the University of Ulster the idea that we could and should be doing something with this. My ideas are based on business model generation from Alexander Osterwalder and the business canvas, business model canvas, similar to my own 8-box model, but the product would be 6 weeks of student study wrapped around textbooks with an element of face-to-face, but they would have to manage that themselves. It would be free. There would be opportunity cost of my time, but there would also be a little bit for hosting. We'd get it promoted in the usual ways, word of mouth, and the local priests do wonderful things to help people recruit in Cavan, so they'll do it. We'll have a promotional website. It'll be distributed online. The customers would be in the province of Ulster. There would be adults going for employability. There's the books that people could use, or there are face-to-face classes at the colleges and so on. But there's an opportunity for us to do something. It's transferable to other programs. So what I need to do is create a prototype, refine it, and then transfer it beyond Ulster into other programs. Finally, we win prizes for things that we do in innovation and entrepreneurship and so on. I'm the distinguished guy on the far right there and my fuller figure. And there's a resource called MOOC List that will tell you more about MOOCs. And as takeaways, look at Eliadomy. But before that, there, ask your own students what apps do they use. I'm encouraging students to use apps rather than books for this. Look at Meetups, Eliadomy, Weebly, MOOC List, Open Badges, the work of Clayton Christensen, and then the work of Kyle Peck, and finally two more. Look for MOOC corpus linguistics, just Google it. And finally, Ken Robinson Animate will take you to more work done by Sir Ken Robinson in looking at changing paradigms for education. I'm into my closing remarks, which is, I'm finished, I'm drained of all energy. Am I just away with the fairies, or does this have any questions, does it prompt any questions around encouraging students? The students have them, they bring to me their apps, their online dictionaries and so on. This is the world they would be comfortable in. Any questions?
Can you hear me? I just wonder, with the whole students are responsible for meeting each other themselves face to face, so how do you get them to be able to come to college and produce the language to speak to each other?
My point for this is that they don't come to college.
Was that the aim at the end of it not to be encouraging them to then come to
Then they will come to our various programmes. But remember, these people have been in Ireland for maybe half a dozen years. Many of them are working in, say, mushroom farm, or they're working in a manufacturing environment. They have a lot of opportunity to practice English, you know, in the day-to-day life that they do. Many of their neighbours, they're speaking English to as well. So it's not as if they're in Latvia or Lithuania or Poland. They've got the opportunity to use it on a day-to-day basis. But the meet-up agendas would give them, what do I need to concentrate on for this week, that week, or the other week? And that will gradually improve. Yes. But it is an issue.
Just on the point of production, I mean, there is a room for production
work,
push forms, a lot of online courses.
Exactly.
Where a lot of the interactivity between the participants is discussion forms.
Yes.
Kind of given a chance to maybe think very carefully and to reformulate kind of with the accuracy in mind as well as confidence, your little kind of bit.
Yes. But by giving, using something like a Moodle or the Elianime, you know, discussion forum element, you can give them a wee bit of structured writing where they have to write 40 or 50 words, a bit like the BEC exam, you know, writing tests.
Mm-hmm. No, yes. I think it's kind of answered it there, but just I can understand how you would give them the information to collect the feedback on them. Depending on how many people you have, it's just such a time consuming.
Yes. Oh no. Like, when we're talking about thousands of people in a MOOC, then this is where whole different models for correction, self-correction, peer correction. It's not as if Arthur's going to collect in a lot of exercise books and take them back the following week. We're going to have to think of other ways of doing it.
Okay. And what about the email they're speaking? If they're producing in their cafes when they organise their own meetups.
To be honest, a lot of that is going to have to be, you know, peer correction or other people to say, I'm sorry, I don't understand you. But the whole, it's a bit like speed dating with other languages in that cafe or bar environment. One would be Polish, one would be Brazilian, one would be maybe a Mandarin speaker and so on. So English would be the only language of common. It isn't perfect where teachers would be able to hear nuances of and, you know, patterns of incorrectness, but at least it's better than nothing.
First time you're on me, I'm talking, but I enjoy your voice on that. I want to say, I disagree with a lot of the idea of the discussion program if there is not more moderation online. It's got moderation absolutely free, and absolutely one of the second things. I think that there are solutions for this. There's some that are right here in London right now. There are groups called the programs under the website that I've set up for free English and Dublin.
Is this the Daily English?
No, it's called Free English and Dublin. It's a meetup on Facebook.
Okay, right.
Post,
okay, yeah. Okay.
Pull it off and come up and speak up to me, and they will talk and speak.
Yes. Uh-huh. So, this is innovation at work, in the sense it's awfully quick, it's awfully dirty, but it's got something going and it needs an awful lot of further refinement. One last example is, I heard recently that there are a lot of quite elderly people who are at home. They've got telephones and so on, and they've got nobody to talk to, perhaps apart from a phone call or two from a relative at the weekend. Well, surely, could I talk to Esther Ranson and get people who are already, they're very articulate, and they would, if somebody wanted to practice their English, provide agendas for that, and give people 5 or 10 minutes to practice on particular topics.
Last one.
Last question. That is something that has to be looked at in terms of how it can fit it in and how this could work for other levels or areas of specialism. But this is just like you get a prototype of a sort of vanilla flavoured generic model which could then be further developed and tweaked. The only cost to someone doing this would be the cost of getting the Murphy or the McCarthy and O'Dell books. And I was in the Eastons the other night. They are heaped that high downstairs in Cobble Street. People are buying those books. Otherwise, Eastons wouldn't be selling them in such quantity. I'm around today. I'm around tomorrow. But I think I feel the body language says you're finished, Darden.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Arthur, for enlightening and performance. Okay, now we are free until 5 o'clock. No? I'll let you know.
Yeah, thanks Arthur.
Sorry, just that's enough. Take it back to
Okay, so from now until our panel discussion event will begin.